Some days call for some oomph to amplify your everyday look. Like when you want the look of false lashes without the extra effort. Reach for Thrive Cosmetics Liquid Lash Volumizer Mascara. Or when you want all eyes on your smile, keep Empower Gloss Ultra Glossy Lip Serum in your bag. It's a burst of 24-hour hydration that smooths like a serum, shines like a gloss, and can be worn sheer or layered. You'll also look and feel your best with Thrive Cosmetics. Plus, every product is 100% vegan, cruelty-free, and made with clean, skin-loving ingredients that work with your skin, not against it. And for every product purchased, Thrive Cosmetics donates to help communities thrive. So every time you use your favorite Thrive Cosmetics product, you're helping communities you care about too. Amplify your everyday. Go to thrivecosmetics.com/shine26 for an exclusive offer of 20% off your first order. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS.com/shine26.
This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
Let's move over to another conversation. We haven't talked about this for a few days. Nancy Guthrie has been missing from her Tucson home for nearly 6 months. No suspect name, no arrest. And 2 days ago, a former FBI agent went on camera and said out loud what nobody in an official capacity has been willing to say. The case is completely cold. He's a former FBI agent, just like Jennifer Coffendaffer, who is with us, and Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent. What's your guys' take? Jen, I'm going to start with you. Is Steve Wright, is this case completely cold, as he said to Brian Anton the other day, Jen? Has the train derailed? Robin, how about you? What's your take on it? Do you think that this case is completely cold? We have not had any sort of updates in any sort of official capacity. I don't know in how long. That doesn't necessarily mean there's not things going on in the background, though. Robin, what's your take?
Yeah, it's anytime you see a former agent saying it's completely cold or not cold, that they aren't currently in, I always approach that with a good dose of maybe. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, though, I'm leaning towards there's not a lot of momentum is a good way to put it. I think there's a lot of waiting for returns on. I think still they're still waiting on DNA, I think.
Yeah.
And that's why we're in a real gray area of we think there's something going on, like research in certain areas or not. But on the large scale investigation, there's not a lot to be done right now, I wouldn't think, because who else are you going to interview? Because so if you look at it, what else could be going on? Digital forensic, you know, analysis. Well, if we're not getting any new things in, then there's nothing more to investigate there. If there's no new leads on people calling in tips or anything, then there's no more people to interview there. I just, again, it's hard to judge it because if we're not seeing it in the public venue, then is there more going on? I personally don't think there's a whole lot going on. Do I think it's cold? No, but do I think there's a lot of momentum? Definitely not. It's kind of a, this just case such a shit show.
If there was things going on behind the scenes, if there was momentum, if there was, you know, traction being made and the plow is being moved down the field like Jeremy Clarkson on the farm. So I've become addicted to as well.
That's a good one, isn't it?
What would we be seeing right now in the public? Would we be seeing anything? Obviously, the FBI, they're going to keep everything very close to the vest until anything actually comes out. We've had a lot of leakage. It was, you know, allegedly from a lot of people, from this person has this person is that source, and the other person has that other source, and they're all saying different things. So I don't know how reliable that leakage even is. But what would we be seeing if they're making solid strides here?
I would think we'd see leakage with new information. Go ahead.
Oh, Jen's back. Okay.
Yeah, Jen, go ahead, Jen.
You go, Jen.
The train is back on the track. Hey, listen, but I think the comments by that agent, with all due respect, and I think that is off the track. I'm just going to be crystal clear why I think that. Cold, the definition of a cold case is when you have nothing left. You have no roads to go down. It's ice cold. You have nothing, and it goes on the cold case shelf. That's what happens to it. You don't work it anymore. It goes in what we call in the FBI pending and active. That's literally what we rename it from, an active case. So that isn't what we have here. Listen to all these roads that still need to be gone down. We still have no answers, and I know they're still pursuing this. This I have firsthand knowledge of.
Okay.
They are pursuing the road of the IP address connected to those first two notes. They are still pursuing that, those notes that went into the media sources, the local media sources, and the one note that went to TMZ as well. So that isn't a dead end. It's just an inroad that is taking forever to resolve. There still is the Bitcoin that we can't just forget about. That is still being looked at by the, you know, leading nation cryptocurrency Bitcoin wallet openers. Like, that is what they do, and that's what they're going to be doing. Also, we haven't even talked about the 10,000 leads. I mean, just make yourself a to-do list and put 10 things on it a day. How long is it going to take? Now they're down to about 24 agents on that squad and, you know, maybe a half a dozen working this fairly full-time. We don't even know all those leads that might be in there that have been triaged that they're still following up on. I think there is still so much to do. And then, of course, we know about the DNA and all of that, but I think there's so much going on behind the scenes and from being in those shoes, and it depends on each agent's background. I know his background is a pilot and CT, and which is great, but being in that war room and working these violent crime cases, there's a lot of roads I think they're going down.
How much longer do you think it's going to be for the, you know, basically tempo-wise for like the IP checks and the crypto checks? Because that's a real unknown area, because that stuff wasn't going on when I was still in. That's more relatively new. Any idea on the tempo of that? And I get the 10,000 leads and 10,000, you know, more interviews to do. That takes time, and it's laborious, and trying to track down people that call that stuff in, it takes a lot of time, especially if you have limited number of agents doing those things, and it's a collateral duty to do those things. But what about the electronic stuff, Jen?
You know, I think it's going to take a long time because obviously all they're hitting are dead ends. You know, they're just hitting dead end after dead end. And I think it's going to be similar, although it's taking much longer, to the situation with Porch Guy when his face was revealed on those videos. And it was a big aha moment on day 10, right? I think that that's what we're going to see. Quiet, quiet, quiet. And then a huge aha moment with maybe even somebody that comes forward as to Porch Guy's, you know, identity. There's another agent that's talked a lot about this case, and she has said that, oh, it's red hot and they're about to basically arrest Porch Guy. So, you know, there's so many opinions out there. My opinions are definitely based on working the cases and historical knowledge on these kinds of cases and just how long they take. So not insider source information per se.
Let me ask you about that.
They just take a long time.
Because so many, I mean, there's a ton of people reporting on this. A ton of people have their inside source with the FBI that they anonymously report what they think they're getting. And we have a lot of really good reporters out there that it's not just, you know, some of these grifters that are out there. I mean, there's some really solid lifelong reporters that have their inside sources and it's seemingly they're all saying different things. That number one, that's leakage that's going on that obviously shouldn't be, but is. But you have this many different, opinions coming out of these, you know, quote unquote sources from inside the actual FBI. How does that read to you, Jen? I mean, what does that tell you when that's going on in a case like this?
Well, you know, and I know Robin and I have talked about it on your show before. It's so disheartening to us, I think, because it's unfathomable to think that anyone with real knowledge on this case is saying anything of any importance. And it's really disheartening if that's truly happening. I really just don't think that's happening. I think it's several steps removed. And that's why, you know, one source says the notes are fake. Another source says the notes are real. Mm-hmm. Another source says, you know, this is, I mean, we've heard it all, haven't we? The case mm-hmm. is about to be solved. Another one says it's ice cold. I mean, it's so ridiculous, the differentiation of opinions on this deal. And it's because, quite frankly, no one knows, because we haven't seen the information out there. But that's why you have to go with, what does an investigation like this look like behind the scenes? And it's going to take time, or somebody recognizing porch gas.
So, and Jen, correct me if I'm wrong on how I see all this leakage coming. And that's why I, you know, and for Tony and the audience, I go more on what Jen says on this, not because, like she said, she's there on the case, but she's mm-hmm. got reps doing these kinds of cases. And so when I was working my cases and Jen was working the same types of space as I was, here's where you might be having leakage that could be inaccurate information. Mm-hmm. So typically, like when I was in 26 Federal Plaza in Lower Manhattan, we had, you know, you had entire floors. There was no like separate offices. There was separate cubicles for the supervisors, which their dividers went a little bit higher. But everyone, I could see six squads in one big floor. And typically, you could tell if a squad had something going on or not by the tempo of that squad, the people that are coming and going, or they're sitting at the desk. I mean, so you could tell by what's going on, if there's a lot going on, a little going on, they had a big case, not a big case, by the comings and goings, because you could see what was going on without any knowledge of exactly what was going on. And so a conjecture of mine is you could get leakage from insider sources, from someone who is adjacent to a squad. You could, or they're seeing things in the office, they're seeing a tempo shift. Doesn't mean that there's not anything going on. They might have hit a different phase, like Jen's saying, a different phase of investigation, which instead of going out and interviewing 50,000 million people, they're sitting behind a desk just analyzing what's coming in, or they've removed all the information to an offsite and they're doing it there. So they're not seeing any tempo on a squad. So this could be conjecture from people if there are inside sources that are just not privy to exactly what's going on, because they're not on the squad, they're adjacent to the squad. So that's just one conjecture of mine about why you're having differing opinions on all these things, because they're actually not there. They're just close enough, they think they know. Am I right on that, Jen?
Well, I'll take it even one step forward or further, and I agree with you, Robin, but I think it's maybe that person then literally says something, hey, what's going on that Nancy Guthrie case, to the hubby. And the hubby says, you know, it's dying down, or, oh, they've got a great lead. And then she's in the beauty shop and she's talking, and, you know, everybody knows she's the wife of the agent. And, you know, that is literally how far removed this information could be.
Yep. Yep. Yeah.
And that's what people run with. And it's just too many layers and not knowledge that's coming from. My understanding, and this was through CBS reporting, is there are 24 people on that squad and 12 people, I believe, that are quote unquote assigned. I believe that was their reporting.
You know
how that dribbles down, because everybody sometimes can forget there's other huge cases that were going on when Nancy Guthrie's case was going on. They were on the precipice of doing warrants. They were doing a drug thing. They were doing, you know, a violent crime case that hit ahead. And those agents can't be all working Nancy Guthrie. And that's what happened. It to me, they just sucked that all out, and there's only going to be a few officially assigned.
Absolutely.
Are you at all surprised? I saw we had a comment asking if a vehicle has been ID'd yet, and the answer to that is no. I'm surprised at that fact, that we don't even have anything. Maybe you don't have a license plate. Maybe that's blur. But I mean, it's the middle of the night. I know it's a neighborhood that it's a dark neighborhood, or whatever they call it. But I mean, there are ways of coming and going out of this place where I don't know. I haven't mapped it. I haven't physically been there. So this is just pure ignorant conjecture from someone going, well, there's cameras all over the place. How is it, though? I mean, when you've looked at this closer than I think almost anyone I know, Jen, when someone asks you that question, how is it there's been no vehicle of even interest that seemingly has popped up here in this case that they're honing in on after half a year now with cameras being everywhere. There's not a ton of people on the road at that time. How are we? How is there nothing in that department?
I got to tell you, that's the most disconcerting part to me, not because I would expect them in the light pollution areas. No, but what I would do is set up, and actually I'm going to put this out in a tweet, with each choke point that leaves that neighborhood, follow it through to the next choke point. Because remember, we're talking at, 2:30 in the morning. It's not like we're talking about rush hour, for heaven's sake. There's only going to be so many cars that ultimately have to leave a checkpoint. I mean, a choke point, we call them. In other words, where you have to turn left or right or go straight, and you take those choke points and you look at the cameras on those choke points. Then you go to the next one. It's a lot. It's laborious. But we have thousands of analysts, and that is exactly what they do well. They say, listen, you just take this route and analyze every choke point, who has a ring, who has a nest, get that subpoenaed, and let's get this resolved, because at some point they have to come out. They have out. They're not going through that desert.
How have they not done that by now? I mean, or have they, and they don't have anything? I don't know. I mean, unless the guys got into a hot air balloon and picked her up and went into the sky, I don't know how there's not
something. We got the hot air balloon theory just hit the Nancy Guthrie case.
There we go. There's the headline. Oh, was Nancy abducted in a hot air balloon? You know? I don't know.
Conspiracy among all the scientists. Okay, we won't even go down that road. That'll get me really sardonic in a hot minute. But no, but this is the thing with this. It is arduous work. You can't even look away for a second. I mean, you take breaks and you pause it. But you know what I mean? Literally one blink of your eye, one looking away for a second means you could miss that car that went by. Right?
Yeah,
it's arduous work. And I want to mention this, too. And I don't know if you saw this, but this is something really bothering me, is the Cal Ripken case. 74 years old, gunman goes into her house, abducts her at gunpoint, takes her, wants money and wants her car, starts feeling sorry for her. Like she says, I don't want my eyes bandaged because I'm got claustrophobia. They take that off. They put or don't even put it on. I think just put the blindfold on. They have her gagged. They give her cigarettes. They give her food. Listen, this is the scary part. You ready? He is on camera at a Walmart. I've got the footage. Many people have it. There's a composite sketch of him. It's been since 2012. They still do not have this guy who kidnapped her. Now, he let her go after about just under 24 hours, like 23 hours and 20 minutes or something. But can you imagine in this day and age, they were smoking in there? Can you imagine the DNA-laden vehicle that they have? Still haven't solved that case. $100,000 reward still exists.
It's mind-boggling with the technology that we have. I mean, that's why it's disturbing. And I mean, nothing of any sort of revelation should be happening on a podcast or this or that to investigators here. When we're talking about the choke points on the road and all that, they have to have looked at these things by now. Nobody's like, oh, that's a good idea. Heard that on the podcast. I'm going to go down that road. I mean, they have to have done these things, haven't they? I mean,
maybe.
They have. I guarantee there's analysts looking at all of this. I think there's a huge level of frustration. I can't even imagine because what I really agreed with the agent that Brian interviewed was the level of, and Robin knows all about this too, the level of pressure that an agent is going to put on themselves. I'm telling you, whoever's working this case, they are still not sleeping at night. They are sick. They're waking up in the middle of the night going, oh, wait a minute. Maybe we should do this. Did we look at that? And then you have the administration putting, their bosses putting pressure on them.
Oh, yeah.
It's a national embarrassment, really, at this point. But it's more, I think, the fact that it takes patience. It's going to take a big break. I swear, every time I get a phone call late at night, I'm like, oh, my God. They've discovered who Parchka is. That's my first thought.
Every time I go on Twitter or X and I see some like, oh, nope, it's nothing. Every single time. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Love for you to weigh in. That's where Nancy Guthrie is sitting right now. Obviously, we will continue to follow it. Be sure to press subscribe as we continue to work our way through it.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Tell us where to look for her. That's what Savannah Guthrie said in a video that was recently posted onto Instagram, July 27th of 2026, the exact date of that. In case you're playing along in the future, looking back at this going, oh, how did this timeline play out? The verbiage is important here. Not bring her home, not we want to hear from you, not we're ready to talk. Where to look? Almost 6 months after an armed masked figure walked up to Nancy Guthrie's front door in Tucson's Catalina Foothills, covered the Nest camera, and took an 84-year-old woman from her bed. Her daughter is no longer asking for a phone call. She's asking for a location. And that shift from negotiation to this is the whole story. We welcome your thoughts, your comments in the comment section. Substack, YouTube links are in the description. And be sure to press subscribe wherever you're listening or watching this. If you want to take us with you on the go, we're available wherever you get podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeart, you name it. We are there. Just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. You can listen to all of our content and take us with you at any time through the podcast. Do be sure to check that out. We exist beyond YouTube as well. Let's go back to the first week of February. Savannah and her siblings stood in front of a camera and said, whoever is out there holding our mother, we want to hear from you. Savannah's brother Cameron followed with a second video. We need a way to communicate. We need proof of life. That was a family in crisis, but it was a family that still believed there was someone on the other end of the line who had something to offer. A transaction, a conversation, a deal. Now listen to the July 27th. It's been months since her mom was taken from us. Her family is in agony. We are in a nightmare that will not end. She paused. Nothing about our situation has changed. That line. Nothing about her situation has changed is doing more work than anything else in the video. It's an admission. 5 months of FBI deployment, over 13,000 tips called in, 150 federal agents assigned, $1 million plus reward sitting uncollected, and nothing has changed. But listen to this. Savannah spoke directly to whoever took her mother. Not to the public, not to tipsters, to one person. And here's what she said. The world can be a cruel and unforgiving place. And I know that you have tried to do things the right way. I know that you have tried to do things the right way. She's offering empathy to the person who allegedly broke into her mother's house with a weapon in the middle of the night. And she went further. For all of us, no matter where we've been and what we've done, I believe there is always a way home. It's not rage. It's not a negotiation. It's a daughter offering something close to absolution because every other approach has failed. Anger didn't work. Money didn't work. The biggest law enforcement apparatus in the country didn't work. So she's trying the one thing she had left. Mercy. And she aimed it at the person who allegedly destroyed her family. Savannah Guthrie didn't record that video in a vacuum. The week of July 21st, and the Nancy Guthrie case, it cracked wide open again, but not because of a break in the investigation, because of podcasts and a bureaucratic knife fight. On July 23rd, former Arizona reporter Brianna Whitney sat down with Ashley Flowers on Crime Junkie, one of the biggest true crime podcasts in the country, and she did something no one's done publicly since the case began. She read aloud from the first ransom note. She read it verbatim. Hello, Savannah. We have your mother, Nancy. She is safe but scared. She will be held for ransom, and once payment is received, she will be released unharmed. The note reportedly demanded millions in Bitcoin. It gave a seven-day deadline. It included details that reportedly have not been released to the public: the location of Nancy's Apple Watch inside her bedroom, a smashed floodlight in the backyard, the kind of stuff only someone who was actually inside that house would likely know. When he also described the second communication, this one allegedly claimed the kidnappers had underestimated Nancy's medical condition, that she had died shortly after being taken. That message reportedly ended with an apology. Copies of the note apparently are not going to be released because their authenticity hasn't been independently verified. Law enforcement hasn't confirmed them either, but here's where it gets complicated. The FBI has said that some ransom communications received in this case are considered potentially legitimate, and the one confirmed fraud tells you why that distinction matters. California man named Derek Kalela pled guilty on July 2nd to sending a fake Bitcoin demand to the Guthrie family. He was caught precisely because his note didn't have those details. Kalela admitted he saw the case on television and found the family's contact information online. His text was crude and misspelled. It contained nothing that wasn't already public, no operational details, no inside knowledge. He had no inside knowledge. He was a grifter writing a tragedy. The FBI caught him in days. The distinction matters. Some notes were fraud. Some notes allegedly contained information that some interpret as only the person inside that house on February 1st would know. In my opinion, that's still up for a bit of interpretation. Saying a watch was on the floor and there was a broken floodlight that's already on cameras isn't super convincing to me. One of the notes allegedly says Nancy's dead. The same day that that episode dropped, FBI Director Kash Patel sat down with Fox News Digital and publicly accused the Pima County Sheriff's Department of keeping the FBI out of the investigation for 4 days after Nancy disappeared. Patel claimed the delay may have permanently destroyed critical Nest doorbell camera footage. Nancy didn't have a cloud subscription for her Nest camera. That meant the video wasn't saved in the normal way. It sat on Google's backend cache, about to get deleted. While the sheriff's office ran the case by themselves, the FBI ultimately worked with Google to salvage some of that cached footage. The images of the masked armed figure at the door released February 10th. But Patel says whatever else might have been recoverable was gone before federal agents could reach it. The physical camera itself was also missing from the scene. The next day, the Pima County Sheriff's Department fired back. They pointed to the February 3rd press conference where FBI Assistant Special Agent in Charge John Edwards stood right next to Sheriff Chris Nanos and publicly described FBI involvement in the case less than 4 days after Nancy vanished. How exactly were we keeping you out if your own people were standing at our podium? I know you are, but what am I? But then Pima County did something that deserves attention. In the same statement on the subject of ransom notes, the department said any questions regarding alleged ransom notes should be directed to the FBI. They'll own the DNA. They'll own the investigation. But the ransom communications, the thread that allegedly includes notes with operational details about the crime scene, the thread that might actually lead somewhere, they passed the entire thing to the feds, handed it off, not our department. Two agencies both pointing at the other. 6 months into a case and no suspect, no arrest. An 84-year-old woman who has not been seen since the night of January 31st. And here's the ledger of what those 6 months actually produced. DNA recovered from gloves found near the scene. No identification or no identified match. Mixed DNA samples collected from inside the home, described by Sheriff Nanos as a biological puzzle that could take months to decipher. Genealogy testing announced back in February. No public results. And a nighttime operation on February 14th near East Orange Grove Road A search warrant executed, reports of two men and an older woman detained, media cameras descending on the scene, no arrest, nothing came of it. Over 13,000 tips called into the FBI, 150 agents deployed across the investigation, multiple ransom notes analyzed, at least one confirmed fake, some labeled potentially legitimate, none producing a named suspect, surveillance footage recovered from Google's back end showing a figure described as a male, approximately 5'9" to 5'10", average build, wearing a $25 backpack, Ozark Trail backpack, specifically from Walmart. And in 6 months, nobody's been named as a suspect. The case has been classified as a homicide investigation now. No arrest, no suspect, more than $1.2 million in reward money sitting unclaimed. So when Savannah Guthrie posted that video on July 27th, was it strategic? Did she watch the Crime Junkie episode blow the ransom note into public view? Did she see the FBI director and the local sheriff spend the week throwing blame at each other on cable news? And did she decide the only way left was to go around both agencies and speak directly to whoever this is? Or is this simpler than that? Maybe the podcasts and the bureaucratic finger pointing are background noise. Maybe August 1st is 6 months. Maybe Savannah Guthrie recorded that video because she's running out of ways to say please, and the calendar is the only thing that matters. Maybe this is what it sounds like when a family with every resource available, money, fame, media access, the director of the FBI, hits the same wall that every family of a missing person hits eventually. The wall where nobody is coming to help, and the only thing left is to post a video and hope somebody is listening. That reading might actually be worse, because if the timing is strategic, at least it means someone is still working angles. If it's just grief hitting the 6 month mark, it means there are no angles left to work. A daughter with one of the biggest platforms in American media is sitting in front of a camera offering forgiveness to the person who allegedly took her mother. She has $1 million reward. She has the full weight of the FBI, and she's doing it anyway because nothing else has moved the needle one inch. Look at the trajectory. February, we're ready to talk. A family trying to open the channel, we need proof of life. A family making demands, July, tell us where to look for her. A family asking for a grave, help us bring this situation to an end. Not bring her home, bring this to an end. The two agencies responsible for answering that question spent the same week arguing about whose fault it is that they can't. The FBI director says the sheriff cost them evidence. The sheriff says the FBI was there from the start. The ransom notes, some fakes, some allegedly containing details only an intruder would know, sit in a gray zone where nobody will confirm what's real and what isn't. And an 84-year-old woman who needed daily heart medication hasn't been heard from since the night of January 31st. Everyone who knew her described her as sharp as a tack. She never missed her Sunday morning church live stream. Her family dropped her off after dinner and games that night, and she was gone by morning. Savannah Guthrie said one more thing in that video, and I want to keep coming back to. She said, "We have done our part." Past tense. We have done our part. What she's really saying is, it's your turn now. Yours, the person who knows, yours, the agencies who were supposed to solve this, yours, the public who might have seen something because the family has exhausted every tool available to them, the pleas, the reward, the media, the patience. Nancy Guthrie disappeared from her home in the Catalina foothills on February 1st. She was 84 years old. She has limited mobility. She relied on daily medication for a heart condition. She did not leave on her own. Someone walked into that house with a weapon and took her. Almost 6 months later, not the Pima County Sheriff's Department, not the FBI, not 150 agents, not 13,000 tips, not $1 million in reward money. None of it has produced an answer. Her family still doesn't know what happened to her. They still don't know where she is. If you have information about what happened to Nancy Guthrie, the FBI is asking you to call 1-800-CALL-FBI. You can submit anonymous tips through 88 Crime in the Tucson area. The total reward for information stands at more than $1.2 million. Her daughter is asking one thing. Tell us where to look. Your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. Is this case as cold as it appears to be? Is it red hot in the background and we're just not seeing that? Or is it something else? I welcome your thoughts. We'll continue our conversation there in the comments. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you're listening or watching, whether that be Substack, YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeart, wherever it is. Hit subscribe so you don't miss any of our coverage. We do greatly appreciate that. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Here's what happened when one journalist reported on DEI programs.
I decided to just focus on the University of Michigan. I obtained internal documents that showed that the school had spent about $250 million on DEI programs. I spent 2 weeks in Ann Arbor talking to everybody I could find. The unintended consequences of these programs, they had sort of left everybody dissatisfied. And this expensive machinery the school had built just imploded. If you're a journalist, you are not on anyone's team. All you're trying to do is figure out as many of the facts as you can gather. The facts are going to guide you to where the story lands. You're not taking sides. I'm Nick Confessori. I'm an investigations reporter for the New York Times.
Journalists like Nick follow the facts wherever they lead. They go where news breaks, get answers firsthand, and publish what they find. That's fact-based reporting. Seek it out if you don't already.